Today is Palm Sunday. How many people knew that? Great. I think it was one of my biggest surprises when I arrived here, learning about the culture of East Shore and Pacific Northwest Unitarian Universalism, that Easter and Palm Sunday are no big deal. I was like, oh, okay, I can go with that. But I have this place in my body that when it's time to get ready for Easter, I am ready to let go of that 40 days that my parents inspired me with. That you needed to give something up in order to really be ready for all the candy and the bunnies and the Easter things that would show up on Easter Sunday. So we would have actually quite lengthy discussions about what we were going to give up from Ash Wednesday until Easter. And there would be arguments at the table when we were discussing this about really not giving anything up because you know how to live without that. And so we would push each other on actually giving up something that we would miss. So it was quite an exercise. And I no longer give something up for Lent, but I do remember that discipline and what it meant in our Episcopalian tradition. There's a risk when we forget about or don't appreciate or actually reflect on the myths of religious traditions. And I think sometimes Unitarian Universalists run the risk of not being able to see the universal truths that have threaded their way through Christianity. Because of our resistance to Christianity, for whatever reason, maybe it's because of the way we were raised or because of judgments that we hold about people who have religious traditions that are different than ours, and as atheists, agnostics, questioning, whatever, we risk the loss if we don't look at some of those holidays and reflect on the messages that they're supposed to bring. So I thought the story of Jesus' last week on earth, from his Hosanna in the highest sort of entry in celebration into Jerusalem to his death on the cross, are actually true. Now, there's been lots of myths that have been created around him and what happened during that week, or the essence of his living and dying. But there are some truths there that go on beyond the images of bunnies and eggs and candy and baskets and crosses and lilies. And I wanted to hold those up just a little bit today. I think it's important to know that Jesus never intended to save the world. He did not intend to start a religion. What he wanted as a young man, a young adult, was to find something of meaning and purpose in his life and in his faith tradition. He was Jewish, and he loved Judaism. He studied it. It was something that inspired him. He also saw that there was corruption and misuse of some of the Jewish law. He took himself off into the desert for 40 days, and he wrestled with his own life, with his own needs, his values, what was important to him, and he emerged out of the desert with some convictions. He had figured out what he thought was the right thing to do. So 2,000 years ago, he stepped into that temple, determined to serve something greater than himself, determined to bring some authenticity to his own faith and to what he believed Jews needed to do. Now, the story is told that he intentionally entered the temple in the broad daylight, not in the secrecy of darkness. And he went right into the temple courtyard where he thought the biggest atrocity was being committed. where they were selling goods and there were money exchangers and people in the holiest part of the temple making money. So he went right past the Romans at the gate, and he spoke about love of God and love of neighbor. He threw over the money changers' tables. He caused a big ruckus. He was not unlike some of those youth yesterday, trying to inspire adults to do the right thing. He demanded, in front of the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Romans, all the people he considered the enemy, that the poor be taken seriously, that prophets not be created in the temple. And in doing that, he sort of called attention to the authority of the Pharisees and their collusion with the Romans and their abandonment of the essential tenets of Judaism. I think the most important part of the story for me is in that moment, Jesus let go of fear. He let go of his significance. He risked it to ignite and inspire people. And in that moment, he changed the world. He inspired a movement that has affected millions and millions for thousands of years. It's pretty amazing. One of the very basic tenets of almost all faiths, they were created to help people let go of fear. Buddhism, Taoism, Christianity, Sikhism, Judaism. There is something in each one of them that tries to inspire people through a different practice or a tradition of principles and values to not focus your attention on what scares you, on what you are afraid of, to give you some inspiration to release yourself from fear and to live a life without being afraid of falling or catching on fire. Not easy. Not easy. My oldest daughter lives in Denver, Colorado, and she and her husband are solidly middle class. They're both professionals. They earn more than adequate amount of money. But in Denver, the housing market is similar to what it is here. You know, it's like every day the prices go up and up and up. And they bought a house about a little under 2 years ago, hoping that they could afford to expand it. It was really too small. With one child, it was too small, and then they had a second baby, and now it's really too small, and you really notice when the dog is in the room. And then when I visit with another dog, it's pretty chaotic. So they decided we're going to renovate. But because of a lot of natural disasters on the earth, resources for renovations are now very expensive, and it's actually more expensive to redo a house than it is to go and buy a new house. So they struggle with all their Unitarian Universalist values of, you know, not focusing on money and caring for the earth and what's the environmentally right thing to do, and they struggle. And I watch them balancing their own resources with an absolute sense of scarcity. And not enough because of the world around them, sort of pushing them, and the prices of houses, and they actually get really scared. And I think we're all a little like that. The world swirls around us, pushing us to believe in something other than ourselves, to believe in what someone else defines as important, to have a sense of scarcity that drives our decision making. I don't know how to inspire them to let go of that. And we talk about it a lot. Actually, I will get a message when I go back in. They're making an offer on a house today, and I will find out whether they are going to afford it or not. How do we inspire our young people to believe, to have faith in themselves, to define and have faith in enough? What is enough? Tom Doe is the chair of our operating fund drive this year, and he's being supported by Chris Edwards and Sarah Brandeman. And we decided to try something different this year. It's actually something I've been promoting since I got here, which is a year-round sense of operating fund development. Not a one event where we do a whole bunch of hoopla and celebration and inspire you to fill out your pledge cards and think about money as one of the fundamental sources of programming and inspiration at the church. It's been my learning as a minister over 20 years that people are generous when they feel like they belong, when they feel appreciated, when they feel that there's something in their giving that matters. I think that's a cell phone. I just had to make sure. It wasn't some emergency I needed to tend to. Okay, so we're good. So the idea is that, and I've done this in a couple of congregations, where you talk to people about what's important to them. You talk to them about programming that's essential. You talk to them about what they would like to see at the church, where they're involved with the church, what would they like the church to focus on. And you get to know people, and you actually carry that data through databases, and you get to know who's getting ready to retire, who's maybe anticipating an empty nest. And you offer them things that help them make important decisions in their life, whether it's about empty nesting, whether it's making that huge move of letting go of your home and downsizing, whether it's about how to inspire your children to decide what college to go. Because our church should be an intimate part of our life. We should know who each other are. We should be able to give things through programming that inspire your choices, give you something to hold on to, give you a challenge to aspire to. And that's the idea of a year-round membership enhancement process, which we've been trying to work on, but we're actually going to focus on this year. So you will get calls, emails, from people that we're calling visiting stewards, who are going to talk to you about the developmental ministry, about the budget, about programming, about the way that East Shore makes an impact in Bellevue, whether it's through Crossroads or Women's Perspective or housing or food. There's more cell phones. Does anybody else have a cell phone that you need to tend to right now? Okay. It's important that your faith be relevant to your life, that it offer you some foundation for your decision making. And we want to hear from you what that means. I cannot decide what is relevant for your living or your choices. But we want to hear. We want to be able to document what's important to you so that a year from now, 2 years from now, we can check in and say, are you getting what you need? Are you finding what you want? So I'm inviting you to develop a faith with your membership. Develop your beliefs with other members here. Talk to the visiting stewards. Let go of whatever resistance you've had in the past of, oh, they only talk to me when they want my money. That may have been true. It also might just be a perception. And we would like to shift that perception. So I encourage you to go to one of the town halls that will explain the budget priorities for this year, that will help you think about this developmental ministry that you're stepping into, and will help you to think about how you develop a theology of abundance, how you begin to focus your attention on what's possible here, and not think about your fear of falling or starting on fire. I recently heard a speaker on National Public Radio. And they were comparing I think it might have been during the membership campaign that they do, you know, when they're asking us all to be evergreen members. We're going to ask you about that, too. We're going to encourage you to be monthly contributors on a regular basis so you don't have to worry about every year being a pledger. But you just make a monthly contribution that sort of goes on and on. You could be an evergreen friend of Eshore. The speaker was talking about how in the 60s and 70s that we had a much stronger sense of what middle class meant. And middle class then meant that one person in the family could stay home with children, take care of the home. There was enough resources and wages were such that one person working could provide for the needs of a middle-class family. And that's slowly been whittled away over the last 30, 40 years. And now it's mandatory that there be two people working to support a family, to be able to maintain some of the quality of life that came to a much stronger middle class in the 60s and 70s. And in the 60s and 70s, there was a stronger sense of community, corporate, and individual giving. There was a sense that, yes, we should have affirmative action. We should pay for people's health care. We should have Social Security. And as that sense of security in a middle class eroded, so did our sense of generosity, and people became much more fear-based. And we began to believe in scarcity, not abundance. People became less generous. Corporations became less generous. And we've seen the gulf between the haves and the have-nots grow. And the interesting consequence is that people with billions and billions still feel that there is not enough. There's a sense of scarcity and a sense of I have to hold on to that. And we have not become more generous as we've become more wealthy. And it's actually been shown, just like the widow in the story, that the people who give the largest percentage of their income to support their churches, community events, their neighbors when fires are happening, or someone's health, or when a child gets sick, the people with the least give the most. My personal opinion on that is that those people have chosen not to live their lives in fear. They have chosen to share what comes to them as seed and give it as blossom. And what comes to them as blossom, they pass on as fruit. I would like Eshore to learn to not be afraid. I have seen fear since I've arrived here. Part of your interim work has been to let go of fear and scarcity. Let go of what culture has existed in the past, and to step into a future of possibility, to make room in your hearts, in your lives, in your budgets, in your beliefs, for a new ministry, a new vision that's relevant to your youth, that's relevant to young adults, that welcomes difference and change. I believe I'm speaking to those here who've already grasped that. I think the seats that are empty are for those who are still afraid, are afraid of change, are afraid of letting go, who are afraid that they will lose significance. And it's up to you to invite them in. There's a story about how African hunters trap monkeys. What they do is they put a banana inside a cage, and there's just enough room inside the cage for a monkey to reach their hand in and grasp the banana. But when they're holding onto the banana, they can't get their hand out. So the monkey that frees himself is the monkey that learns to let go. To let go of the banana and choose freedom, as opposed to that really delightful, attractive banana. That's what faith is all about. Teaching people to let go of their riches, of their fears, of whatever it is they are holding so tightly to that it traps them in fear. Ultimately, it's really about letting go of life itself, because that ultimate fear we all deal with is the fear of dying. And we're given opportunity to practice throughout our lives to let go. Maybe it's at Lent, you let go of something that you will live without, to learn what it means to live without it for 40 days, which is hard sometimes. But we're given so many other opportunities to let go in our life. Until we begin to expand our capacity to endure loss of a home, of a job, of a loved one, and be able to live our lives with joy in spite of what we might be asked to surrender. There's a book called Driving in the Rain, Racing in the Rain. Has anyone read that? And in it, it's a story about a dog, but it's also a story about a race car driver. And one part of that book, I remember, he's talking about driving in the rain, and what he says is that if you're a race driver and it's raining, you have got to focus on the road and where you want to go. The minute you are distracted by the wall that you are afraid that you might drive into, you will drive into the wall. The principle of race car driving is load follows vision. And that's true for all of us. Load follows vision. It has been proven that people's lives will go in the direction that they set their sights upon. Our beliefs establish where we will go. If you believe in abundance, if you believe in possibility, that is what you will experience in your life. If you are afraid of falling and bursting into flames, watch out. Watch out. Spirituality of materialism and protectionism to hold tight to those magic pennies is one choice. It's not the only choice. You can respond to your fear by letting go, or you can hold on. It's up to you. There's a song that says, "It is a soul afraid of dying that never learns to live." I invite you to let go of the bananas. I invite you to welcome in a visiting steward and resist your normal response to anyone who's going to call you and want to talk to you, to say yes instead of no. And if your fear has always been of being one of those people that calls to talk to someone, we invite you to try that as well. You'd be surprised how much joy there is in connecting with someone and spending 30 minutes of your day talking about what is really important. This year's operating fund drive is all about membership enhancement. Today's the introduction to membership enhancement. And then think about what's important to you. Think about the direction you would like to see this church move in. I'm back. You must answer the question. Will you live in fear of falling or catching fire? Or will you choose to inhabit your days, to allow your living to open you, to make you less afraid, more accessible? Happiness and inner peace know nothing of fear or scarcity. Happiness and inner peace are directly proportional to our ability to see beauty, to have gratitude, and to serve something greater than self. Choose abundance. Choose faith. Be a birth giver, a life liver, and express what you believe in. Take a minute. And decide.